Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Daniel Maxson. Daniel is the CEO of First Steps ED. His experience includes over 10 years in the charity sector. He served as the chair of Talk ED, which merged with First Steps ED in 2023. During his time there, he led lobbying campaigns to establish better safeguards for people impacted by eating disorders on social media and has been a spokesperson for those affected by these conditions, having lived with bulimia himself. First Steps ED supports children, young people, adults and their families affected by eating difficulties and disorders. In this week's episode, we speak all about Daniel's experience of bulimia and how this has led him to wanting to support others with eating disorders and has created his passion to drive change within the way that eating disorders are treated. Well, Daniel, it is so nice to have you on the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. And thank you for having me.
Amazing. No, it's very exciting. I am very excited to chat to you and taking time out of your big role, which is very exciting to hear about. So did you want to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yes, my name is Daniel Maxson. I am the CEO of First Steps ED, which is a charity that provides support for all ages across the country.
Amazing. No, and it's really nice to chat to you because I've done quite a lot of work with First Steps in the past and hopefully picking that work up again, but there was a different CEO when I worked before, so it's very nice and it's cool to see the changes that are happening. Did you want to tell us a bit more about your role at First Steps?
Yeah, so I joined First Steps ED in summer last year on an interim basis and then interviewed and became the permanent CEO in November. I feel almost embarrassed sometimes talking about it because I am ridiculously passionate about it and I absolutely love my job. I've got lived experience of bulimia for 10 years of my life, and you know, giving back in this way and getting to this position has been a dream of mine for a long time, and we have the most incredible team, a great charity, and I absolutely love it. So my job as CEO is quite a hard one to define, really. The way I describe it is I set a strategy for the organization, make sure that strategy is achievable, sustainable. And then I create a budget so we can resource it properly, have the right tools and processes to achieve our goals and create a charity that's going to be around for as long as it's needed. You know, the goal of a charity is, like ours is always to not exist because it means everyone is supported and, you know, has the right tools. But I think we'll be around for a while longer.
Yeah. And I guess that's the unfortunate reality, isn't it? That actually charities like yourself, the need is becoming much, much greater. And I wondered from your perspective what those goals are that you're trying to achieve at First Steps, you know, what you see as the big issues for people within those that are struggling with eating disorders.
So that's part of our new strategy, really, is defining what is the greatest need. And for us at First Steps ED, you know, we don't have all the answers. We're one piece of the wider puzzle of eating disorder support out there. But the support we offer, we do well. We're really proud of that. We get great results, great feedback, and that's why we get commissioned quite a lot across new counties to deliver more support. And our biggest challenge at the moment is getting more people through the door. You know, we know that we used to talk about it, I think, probably about 10 years ago now, the stats were released that it was about 1.25 million people affected by eating disorders. And we now know that number is estimated to be about 3.4 million that we know of. And so that is a great number and a great increase in 10 years. And, you know, at First Steps ED, we are supporting, and bear in mind, we support on a one-to-one basis, usually over 10 weeks. We're supporting around 3,000 people a year. So what we know we need to do is reach more people you know, and get our name out there. So a big priority of ours is building awareness. It's trying to reach more people. So we're putting a big drive into marketing, into PR, which we've never done before. You know, we redesigned our logo so it was a bit more accessible. But what we've realized in setting all those goals and strategies around awareness building is that stigma is still a huge issue that we're up against. And, I've always been involved in the eating disorder space as a volunteer for the last 10 years, but this is the first time where it's my daily job. And, over those 10 years, I felt like we'd made huge leaps and bounds with stigma. And I believe we still have. But, that was leaps and bounds from being way behind the starting post. So we've still got a long, long way to go. So what we're trying to do now is capture more stories. We're building an ambassador network, a friend of network, and we're just trying to get as many stories out there as possible so people can just find someone that they will relate to and therefore know it's okay just to speak out and get support. Our tagline is, we're here for the first step. That first step that you take, whatever it is, we'll be straight in there and then we'll support you for every step beyond that. So hopefully by just starting by telling stories and breaking that stigma and then falling through with awareness, we can just reach more people and get more people the support they deserve.
Yeah. Well, and I think we know that there are so many people struggling with an eating disorder, but actually them getting the help is, it doesn't seem like people are accessing the support that they need. But it's interesting that from your perspective still, that actually one of the biggest challenges you're seeing is getting people through the door. Are there other things you've reflected on to think could be barriers for people accessing support?
Oh, definitely. I mean, even just from a charity perspective is that, it is still a bit of a postcode lottery where you get support and people just don't know what support is out there. So there's lots of charities regionally supporting eating disorders. We've got the national charity Beat, but still people aren't aware of them and aren't aware of the support that's out there. And if there is a local service through your healthcare provider, often people won't know about that. And it is also regional as well. So there's nothing connecting it all together. And a big goal of ours is to be more active in REDCAM, which is a regional eating disorder charity network, because if we actually work together with all of the charities, we can actually then connect all the dots and make sure we have got that coverage. Certainly this whole postcode lottery thing is a real struggle, and I think that's a big factor in my own journey with my eating disorder, because I went to my GP. First of all, I was told that I was a boy and therefore couldn't have an eating disorder, and this is when I was 15 and 17 years ago now. But secondly to that, there was no support around at all for eating disorders. Even when I went to university in Leeds, no support at all.
Yeah. And it's shocking, isn't it, to think that there is that, or there was that lack of support. And I was actually going to ask you about, if you wanted to share your own story, because as you mentioned, sharing stories is so important. So how did your eating disorder kind of develop, and then what was the journey for you?
Well, I'm about to go into my story, and it's a long story, so I don't know how long we've got to go through this. But I'll try and summarise it. And it's interesting because the way I tell my story has changed. It changes year on year, because every year I learn something new about myself and therefore more about, what happened at that early stage of my eating disorder. And to take it back to just the basics of what was going on at that time. So I was 15. I grew up in a small town in North Yorkshire, very proud of it, but there wasn't much going on and there wasn't many opportunities to be different. I was at the time struggling with my sexuality and, I was struggling with all of the things that 15-year-olds may struggle with. I was also really struggling with my weight at the time. So I was already really aware of my body. I was, going to the gym from, I think, the age of 14, and because I had under 16-year-old classes. But, I was still fairly confident and, I still had a lot of pride in myself. And, it wasn't never, a lot of people used to make fun of my weight or, call me fat. And, I can remember there was a girl at school used to say that whenever I walked around those earthquakes, and I just think, what a load of nonsense. Like, I just don't care. Like, I'm happy living my life. And, it wasn't ever something that I realized was impacting me. I think I developed a tool where I just blocked it all out. And, I focused on my future and where I'd be in the future. But when I was 15, unfortunately, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. 9 months later, my mum was diagnosed with cancer. My dad was able to be treated through radiotherapy, and it was quite a quick process. My mum, unfortunately, went into quite a significant battle. And at the time, we were told by our GP, when I was 16, he said, you've got to start preparing her funeral. There's a one in, I think it's something like 90 million% chance you can get through this. At the time, I just lost control. I felt like everything was crumbling. And my bulimia started. And I know now it started as a layer of it was about control. Another layer of it was actually about punishment to me, because I felt that, you know, I'm the gay child. I'm the one that I'm is told is so wrong, and yet my parents are the ones that have been punished. And I aligned those together, which, you know, is a I have so much sympathy for my 16-year-old self now, because, you know, I've got such pride in my sexuality. But at the time, though, I had no idea what this was. I was watching Hollyoaks. This is a real throwback. I was watching Hollyoaks at the time, and there's a character called Hannah who had an eating disorder, and that was her storyline. And whether or not they did it correctly could be a whole nother conversation. But that opened my eyes up to what I could do, and this idea that, you know, oh, this is a great way of controlling things. This is a great way of, you know, maybe if I lose weight, people won't focus on the me being the kid whose both parents have got cancer. They might think, look, here's this person that just blends into the background. No, yeah, there's so many complex things going on, but it started, and you know, about 2 years in, my mum eventually recovered from cancer as well, and I'm so blessed that both my parents survived that. Especially with my mum, with the battle that she had, it was tough. But she came home, and it must have been in the first couple of weeks when she was out of hospital. She went for a walk with me, and she, you know, on that walk, she said, told me that when she was a teenager, she had anorexia, and she couldn't get any support. But you know, and it's actually her grandma who coached her through it. And you know, she said to me that times are different now. There is support out there. I'm seeing something in you, and I want to be that support for you. I'll come to doctors with you. So we booked into our GP appointment. This is just before I was 18 and going to university. I met with my GP, and this is the same family doctor that was looking after my family. So he knew what was going on in my life. And I explained to him that I was making myself sick after all my meals. And, you know, at the time, I was really struggling with dizzy spells and fainting and energy. And he just told me that it's nothing to worry about. I'm a boy, it's hormonal. Here's some tablets for indigestion and get on your way. And oh, I cannot tell you just how much that crushed me. I remember I was walking back out of that doctor's room back to the waiting room where my mum was, and all I could think was, my mum has just been through the battle of a lifetime to survive this. How can I walk out of there and burden her by saying that, you know, I'm not going to get the support that, you know, I thought I deserved at the time? And I just couldn't do that, so I just shut down and said, that's it. I will just continue living with this and pretend to my family that I've got the support, pretend to everybody around me that I'm better, and just live my life like this, with, at that point, thinking this is just it, that there's no other alternative to it.
Wow.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm a bit stunned for words.
I know it's tough, isn't it? And I would put that disclaimer in there then, because I am obviously, I appreciate that is, you know, it feels like a hopeless story, but I have to say, you know, there is so much more to it. And I paused it there because, you know, hopefully you'll now see, you know, what is the driving factor behind me to lead a charity that's so aligned with the NHS, that provides NHS services. And, you know, and that's where my passion comes from, to making sure that no one goes through a similar story to what I've been through. And, you know, let me just tell everybody who's listening, my story does get, you know, it goes up and down. There's a big journey there, but there's so many positives in it, and I wouldn't change a thing. I really wouldn't, because it's given me the strength, the empathy, and yeah, you know, it's given me that spark that I always felt I had when I was younger. But I learned so much about how much to, you know, ignite that, to hold on to it when I need to. Yeah, and I wouldn't change it.
Yeah. And do you know what? I can completely resonate with you there in that I wouldn't wish it upon anybody else. But actually, you know, the journey I've been on myself has given me skills and, you know, the ability to empathize, as you said, with people in a way that I don't think I would have done if I hadn't had that experience. But I mean, firstly, when you said about what your mum said to you, I could feel tears coming from my eyes, because how incredible of her to. I think that speaks volumes in terms of when you've had an eating disorder yourself, of how much you can understand or you can sense it in other people. And the fact that she was then so supportive to you to say, you know, I'm coming with you and we'll do this together, to then be met by those comments from the doctor. I think, you know, it's slightly different, but I had a similar thing with ADHD. When I went to the GP, they were like, well, no, you're a girl, so you can't have ADHD. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine. I'm like, but I'm not fine. That's the thing. I don't care whether it's ADHD or not. Like, something's not quite right. And I assume probably you had the same mental process with the bulimia. It was like, for one, I know that it is bulimia, but also this isn't okay. All these symptoms I'm getting, so you telling me I'm okay is really invalidating.
Yeah, and I just don't like this thing where it's, oh, you're this and you can't have that. We're all human, we can develop all the human conditions. So yeah, and I think about that, doctor, and you know, and I don't think that it was ignorance, or you know, I don't think it was personal. I just don't think they had the tools themselves or the awareness.
No.
I think they just, I wouldn't have a clue about, you know, about what I was going through, and you know, what is the actual right pathway for me, how to diagnose it, what to actually give me to treat it. So I think it was just a lack of education on their side as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I imagine especially, you know, what did you say? It was 17 years ago, did you say?
Yes, I know. That terrifies me to say that. I'm still in the habit of talking about my journey. And I'm still in the habit where I talk about my journey. I'm like, oh, yeah, 5 years ago. And now, yeah, 17 years ago.
I'm hopeful that times have changed and the awareness has increased since then. You would very much hope. But I'm interested if you're happy to continue in talking about your journey, because I think that one thing I often hear from people with experienced bulimia is there's quite a lot of secrecy within their behaviours. And what it sounds like from your experience was that, you know, your mum recognised that and kind of gave you that support, but then actually the response that was then given when you went to seek treatment potentially increase that secrecy even more so because of the response.
Oh, absolutely. Secrecy became my survival mode. And straight after that moment when I was turned away from support, it was actually coincidentally a week before I went to university. So then I got to go off to university and move into student halls. I was very lucky with my halls. I had my own like room and my own ensuite, but then I could just isolate myself and live a very secret lifestyle. And you know, even though I say the things I wouldn't change, I don't think I'd change them. But I guess the things that I regret the most around that is when I switched off and went into that sort of secretive mode, I also just put up so many boundaries around me to not let anybody ever get in or get to know me, because I was so scared that if they got to know me, they'd find out this big secret that I had. And I was just so ashamed of it. And I felt so lonely. I felt at the time I was the only person in the world who must be going through this. And therefore, you know, how can anyone relate to me or, you know, or get close to me? And, you know, I went to university, I was very secretive. And, you know, my bulimia was with me every single day. I did manage to make great friends at university. But, you know, I would never date or let anybody get close to me in that regard, because that was my biggest fear, would be that they would find out about this. I was just terrified. You know, because so much of my eating disorder was attached to my sexuality, I think, you know, the idea of I had them like both almost in the same space, and they filled the same space in my head. So I couldn't let anybody else in to know about my sexuality. I couldn't let anyone else in to know about my bulimia. They were my two biggest secrets, and they were so interconnected. So I was just, it was a really lonely time at university. Friends did find out though, because obviously I lived with people. Mm-hmm. By second year, I was often fainting in the toilet after a purge, because I was, not eating, or when I was, I wasn't in keeping anything in. So friends would find me in the toilet. In my third year, I got to a point where I was, had passed out for a full, I think it must have been about 14 hours. And, you know, I was getting to, it was really impacting my physical health at that point.
I want to ask you a bit more about the bulimia and the sexuality were something that were kind of your two biggest secrets. And often when we talk about sexuality and eating disorders, people will often say there's a big link and there's higher rates of eating disorders in people that aren't cisgender and things like that. But then often I don't like the rhetoric that just because you are gay, that was what caused your eating disorder. Was it that clear cut for you in terms of, I mean, you mentioned the other things that you had in your family, but what sort of relationship did the eating disorder and the sexuality have?
Well, that's quite, this is an interesting discussion for me, because I talk about my sexuality now and my eating disorder, but for a long time, I did not know that connection. It took me a lot of, a lot of rounds of counselling. It took me actually My first round of counselling, I learned quite a lot about it. I relapsed, unfortunately, and my second round of counselling, I learned so much more about my sexuality. So now I talk about it together. But for the longest time, I didn't really have any connection. I couldn't draw the lines between them. And that's what I mean. Like, for me, there were so many layers to it. You know, it wasn't the stress and control around having my parents being sick and, you know, seeing that vulnerability. It was a struggle with weight for me. At university, coincidentally, when I was trying to sort of isolate myself. And at that time, I had lost a significant amount of weight, but that wasn't common. It was often my weight would fluctuate a lot. But there was this time at university when I had lost a lot of weight. And I cannot tell you the amount of compliments I would get and people would comment constantly on my body, to the point where actually at university, things had switched a lot for me with my eating disorder journey. It did become a lot more about body image for me. And it hadn't always been there, and it hadn't really been on my mind. And that switch is one of the things that has impacted me the longest, you know, right through into adulthood, until even to this date, that sudden focus and realization that people were going to suddenly treat me differently because of the way I looked and my body image size. And, you know, as an adult now, I lose control if anyone ever comments on my body. And I don't lose control. I have to be very clear, actually, that I am quite controlled about it, but I want to, you know, I want to scream, like, how dare you talk about that? Like, it's got nothing to do with you. This is my body and you've got no right to comment on it. But yeah, that became a big part of it in that time. So, you know, there's nothing really clear cut about it. And I think that is a real, it's a lesson. It's something we see all the time for the charity. You know, there's no same reason someone would develop an eating disorder. There's no same way for everybody to treat it. Everyone is so individual. This is a very individual experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and for that reason, First Steps ED, we're constantly launching so many new pathways of support to just try and capture all these different ways that someone might respond to peer support, to group support, to resources, etc. Because, you know, it is such a unique journey. But yeah, it is layered and layered and layered. And, you know, as I said to you earlier, each year probably I discover a new layer to it and understand a lot more about that. And I'm a huge advocate for therapy, and I still go to this date. You know, even if it's just once a month to check in, because I really enjoy exploring that side of me and understanding a bit more about it. For me, it's very, very freeing to just understand the past and be able to, like, let go of it. Because, you know, every time I've learned about a new layer to my eating disorder or, you know, a new layer to myself, I'm able to let go of all those negative voices that are attached to it and just be that person.
Yeah. Do you know, I want to, like, capture every quote that you've just said and, you know, plaster it everywhere, because you speak so much. It's just so refreshing to hear what you're saying. And I think you kind of knocked the nail on the head of what I was trying to get at, is that when you're going through those years after recovery, things start to pop up and you know, you think, oh my God, maybe that was something that caused my eating disorder, or, you know, maybe that was something that linked in. And actually what I've realized is that, for me anyway, I could have had all the events that, you know, I have experienced that I potentially think have led me to develop an eating disorder, but actually I could have not experienced any of those and I still could have developed the eating disorder, because a lot of the time it's the characteristics that we have that potentially mean we're vulnerable to developing an eating disorder. And I think a lot of the time people can spend a lot of time trying to go back to think, okay, what was it that caused my eating disorder? What event triggered it? And actually, for me anyway, it's been more about looking to the future to be like, okay, that's happened and that was, you know, a really tough experience, but what can I do now with all that knowledge that I've got now about myself to make sure it doesn't happen in the future? Because for me, you know, I often sit there and I'm like, if I'd have known about my neurodiversity, would I have not developed an eating disorder? Or if I'd have known about, you know, different elements in my life, would I have not developed it? And actually, you're never going to know that answer. And it's also happened. So I think it's about kind of having that in, you know, a little collection of things that you're now aware of and using that going forwards. And what you said about therapy, I am the biggest advocate. Like, when people say, I'm gonna stop therapy because everything's going really well, or like, I don't need therapy because my life is great, It's like, well, actually, now could be the perfect time to do it because you're in a great headspace to be exploring things, to be developing coping mechanisms. If things, you know, if shit does hit the fan, you've already got those skills within you. And I still go to therapy myself because I'm kind of, it's a great place to almost check in and reflect, because often when we're running around in our busy lives, we don't check in to see how we're doing. But it's also just a great place to kind of build those coping mechanisms so that you've got that support structure in place for yourself to avoid things, you know, going down the wrong road in the future.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you touched upon a really interesting point, actually, which I really resonated with my own journey, because when it came to therapy, my first round of therapy was very much looking back and looking back at events. My second round of therapy was not necessarily looking, wasn't looking back at events or things that had happened in my life. It was just exploring myself, you know, and looking inwardly at me. And we sort of did that, you know, we went back to, you know, my 15-year-old self, and it wasn't what happened at the time, it was who were you at that time. And it was really about exploring myself and who I am as a person, you know, as a who is Dan. And you know, and I really enjoyed that side of it. It was a really interesting way of looking at my own struggles in life, and there's been quite a few. But it was, I find it really refreshing just to look at, you know, just, but who am I and why did I relate to that, or why did that impact me? And that has really given me a great arsenal in terms of understanding triggers around me to this day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that for me has been such an important thing of understanding, you know, who you are yourself. And I think that's why, you know, how you said each year you grow, you understand more about yourself. It gives you that stronger foundation, because rather than, well, my experience anyway, sometimes I didn't like bits about me, or I was unsure about bits about me. So the eating sort of almost filled that void. It gave me the kind of identity or the purpose or what have you that I was missing before. But as I'm getting older and developing, I'm like, I'm slotted my own bits in, and also have the confidence to be my weird, wacky self that, you know, 14-year-old Hannah did not want to be that person.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I always, one of the things that I found really interesting in my most recent round of therapy and, you know, and that sort of exploration was really connecting with my 15-year-old self. And I'd always understood this idea of it. I had a friend who I used to go on a running class with who was a practicing shaman, and she was always talking about her inner child. And I was like, oh, I just don't know if I really understand that. But this time when I actually started exploring who I am, I really connected with understanding, you know, who I was at different stages of my life. And even though my therapy continued, I did sort of set a goal of what I wanted to change around my recovery at that time. And a way of marking that, my therapist said to me, at the time, I was actually going to South Africa, and he said, I was climbing Table Mountain. He said to me, like, get on top of Table Mountain and just, like, release your inner child. Just, like, say to him, look, I love you, but I've got this now. You know, adult Dan is stepping in. I was up there with my partner, Liam. We've been together now seven years, and my best friends from childhood, who actually were some of the first people who spoke to me about my eating disorder when I was 16. You know, my friends have always been a real good support for me and knew about it. And we were all there, and I was like, right, I need to have a bit of a ceremony. I was so exhausted after climbing Table Mountain. I didn't know what to do. I was like, I need to something to mark it. And my partner's always made fun of me because I've always got a Velcro wallet. And he was like, come on, you're in your 30s. You've got to have like a smarter wallet than that. So I bought this like new like fake leather wallet from whilst we were out there. And I was like, fine, my ceremony is just going to be putting my Velcro wallet in the bin. And it was quite an unusual ceremony. But my friends were all there watching me. And yeah, they were in on it. They loved it and were supporting it. But I just had this visual where I was like, I was sort of like looking right down into like beyond the Cape, like, you know, right down into the ocean, all the way down to Antarctic. I'm going to get that correct, I hope, but I'm sure it will be corrected. And I just had this visual that I'd just been like, right, you know, I'm letting you go now. And at that time, my visual was very much, see you later and off you go. I've got this now. And it was really powerful and felt great. But it was, funnily enough, it was about 6 months later when I actually got this job at First SCG and I did a bit more learning. And I was like, I actually just don't know if I wanted to just be like, off you go, you're trapped down the Antarctic now. Like, I still want to carry that person with me. And I think I learned, sort of reeled that version of myself back in and was like, I don't need to be like, right, I'm taking over now and, you know, see you later. What I can be like is, love my inner child and my 15-year-old self, but let my mindset take over a bit. Let my head, let adults, Dan's head now take charge, but you can still be there and those feelings can still be there and be valid. It's a real.
Yeah, that's so interesting because I had such a similar experience in my therapy with my therapist was very big on kind of the inner child work, and we did a lot of chair work as well in terms of like the eating disorder sat with the inner child, and then also like adult Han sat with, a younger version of me. And I had a similar thought process in terms of I don't want to get rid of you because actually, my inner child brings out that creativity and that excitement. And, when I'm doing something that I really love, like it's the inner child in me that gets so invigorated by that. But I think for me, it was very much the inner child was very scared and didn't think that we were able to kind of navigate this adult landscape. So a big piece for me was kind of the adult version of myself coming in and being like, it's okay, but we've got this and we don't need to be scared anymore. And kind of saying to the eating disorder, right, I'm stepping in now, because it was almost like the eating disorder was pretending to be the adult. So yeah, I think, I mean, you sound quite similar to me in that like visuals and kind of having something that represents your journey is so powerful to kind of, just taking that next step into, whatever recovery can look like. It's very interesting because over the past year, I feel very much like I have stepped into a very authentic version of myself. And I've kind of embraced this attitude of, if I'm going to be me, and if you like it, fantastic. If you don't like it, that's also cool because not everyone's going to be everyone's cup of tea. But that has meant that I've some friends, because I've stepped back and I'm not people pleasing all the time, the friendship isn't kind of there anymore. And I was saying to one of my friends, in a different respect, people that I've become closer to, we're so incredibly close. Like our brains, it feels like that we're wired exactly the same way. And it was so interesting. I always was so scared to be my authentic self in case it scared people off. But actually, by being my authentic self has meant that, I think other people can see that you're being authentic and they're like, I want to be, I want to have that closer connection with you because you can just resonate so much strongly with people. And I think the same thing about when you're talking to people that have had, a bad mental health experience or if they've struggled with their mental health, there's that sort of understanding between two people where it almost, you kind of just like ignite this little fire between the two of you. And it's something I think that if you haven't had to do that deep work in therapy to explore yourself, that maybe you don't have access to that as much.
Just, living my job in first steps. For me, I talked about my own journey, which basically covered about 5 years of it. Those last 5 years, three of them were just, I found a way to live and find a balance with my life. The last 2 years, I reached out to a charity at the time called Anorexia and Bulimia Care, which eventually became Talk ED, which eventually merged into First Steps ED. They stepped in, they gave me the support, signposted me to a therapist. Now, I was in the end, I went for that support, but I was also very lucky to have my parents pay for private support for me as well. But it was a charity that actually then is the first person who ever heard me out and ever told me that what I was experiencing was valid and that I wasn't alone was the charity. And again, it's why I'm so passionate about building this organization and helping more people because I've been through it and I've been through that system and I have so much hope and belief in it. So I'm not just on here saying I'm a CEO of the charity and I love that charity. Yes, I am, but I'm the CEO of that charity because I've experienced the difference a charity can make.
Yeah, and that's so powerful. I think I was saying this on a podcast the other day. When somebody has lived experience, as we've said throughout the episode today, it gives you that empathy for people. But I think the fact that you're now, working to ensure that First Steps, meets the needs of the people that are going to be using the support, I think is fantastic. Because often I think, within healthcare, sometimes it can be that we take a top-down approach, whereas actually, you're coming at it from the bottom, thinking, what do the people that are using this service need, and how are we going to meet those needs? And, I definitely think because you've had that experience, that's why that's so important to you. And yeah, I'm just very grateful for your passion, because it really is lovely to kind of you know, understand your journey, but also see how passionate you are about helping people. Because I think with things like eating disorders, when you have your experience, you do get that passion behind you. You know, we see it in research, we see it in advocacy work, we see it in so many different places of people with their lived experience then driving the change. Well, thank you so much for chatting to me. It's honestly been such a pleasure, and I really, really appreciate you sharing your story as well, because I'm sure that a lot of people will resonate. And as you said before, you know, sharing our stories is the best way to kind of get people feeling like they can share theirs as well. So where can people go to find out more about First Steps?
Yeah, so we've got our website called First Steps. ed.co.uk. There you can find all the links for referrals. If you would like to make a self-referral, you can refer on somebody's behalf. We also take direct referrals from GPs across the country as well. But our website is our best tool for that. On there as well, we've got our guided resources, so you can download those and do the course if you would like to start sort of first early step. If you're not sure if it's the right sort of route for you, then don't worry. You know, everybody is able to make a referral. We don't require anyone to be diagnosed with eating disorder to come for our support. Even if you have got any sort of eating struggles, any body image struggles, make that referral. You'll get an initial assessment with our most amazing team. And then from there, you'll be guided through what is the best pathway for you. And, you know, we have got many pathways from that. All age support, and that's one-to-one peer support, but counseling, psychotherapy, befriending, so you can have a mentor. We have the digital resources, group support, online group support. We're covering it all off. Anything that would relate to you and your own experience, you know, we'll be there to support you.
Yeah, amazing. I absolutely adore First Steps. And I think, you know, one of the things I love is that it's just so real. And the people, every single person that I know from First Steps also, you know, they have got such a warm heart and just want to help people. And it doesn't feel clinical, which I think sometimes can be a barrier for people if they're going to their GP. You know, it can feel like kind of, you know, the doctor and the patient. Whereas I think there's such a understanding of what it's like to experience an eating disorder at First Steps that I think the values that you hold are just incredible. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It's been and an just to say, you know, to chat to you.
I'm not.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Daniel. I really do appreciate you talking to me today. If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode. So be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.